I'm delighted to be here with Renee Ditchburn and Tammy McCrimmon, and we're going to talk about some of the barriers that returning citizens face when they seek employment, particularly. And I'd like to start with you, Tammy, and get a sense. We were just talking before that you're a native Clevelander.
Yes.
Tell me about a little bit about your path to where you are today. You can start as far back as you want. I'm a historian, so.
Okay. Well, I was born and raised here in Cleveland, Ohio. I have four children. They're also being raised here in Cleveland, Ohio. A couple years ago, I got into a few things that weren't good for me, and I had got incarcerated. I got out March 31st and transferred to the Orion House on 55th.
It's so is that March 31st this year?
Of this year, yes.
2023.
2023 of this year. And they transitioned me home, and I've just been, you know, just trying to get back on my feet and things like that. I'm actually here working towards employment, and they've been a big help to me just as far as, you know, getting back on my feet mm-hmm. and, you know, steering me in the right direction. Mm-hmm. It's been pretty hard, though, just as far as my transition, because I've never been in trouble before. So everything was like kind of new to me. Once I really got out of prison, it's like I had to start all over again.
I don't doubt it. How about when you were actually in prison? Was there anything that you did or that you learned that,
oh, yeah,
that
absolutely.
Helped you prepare for the transition?
Absolutely. I don't look at it as a downfall. I've completed plenty of classes, anger management, domestic violence. I also graduated from a business office services support class.
That was all while you were in prison?
This is all uh-huh. while I was in prison. And that actually helped to, help me deal with some of the time. I did 19 months altogether. I just kept myself busy in there. You know what I'm
yeah.
saying? It's a lot of things that you can actually get into while in prison. And I think that a lot of people don't realize that, like, prison is really the devil's playground. You know what I'm saying? So it takes a lot to stay positive,
yep.
you know, and stay on the right track and not get in more trouble while you're there. But I did great. I didn't get any tickets or anything like that. I didn't get in any trouble. I came out of there with like 6 or 7 certificates. And it basically prepared me for now, you know, to just really to stay focused, you know, and to stay positive. Because if I can maintain a positive attitude and perspective while in prison, then I can do that while I'm actually out and have my freedom.
So I want to come back to the day you got out.
Okay.
But let's talk to Renee for a moment. And Renee, tell us what you do here at Towards Employment, but then tell us how you got here.
Sure. So I'm a program manager here at Towards Employment for one of our new grants from the Department of Labor. It's called Pathways to Success. So basically, I'm managing that program as it starts up for 18 to 24-year-olds only. And it's something new that we have where we can pay them to come through our workshop. And we've got gang violence prevention and things along those lines. I started out here as a data person. I went through the workshop actually 2 years ago, and I got hired to do a work experience, and then a position opened that I was able to apply for. And I got here because, again, did some stupid things, stole money from my employer. So I got a 4-year prison sentence. I was in prison for 11 months, and then I got my judicial release. And basically, because it was my brother-in-law's company, my family has cut me off completely. So being in prison, I would call my younger son's dad, and he would answer at times. But I lived on state pay, kept busy because I was there during COVID. So everything was pretty much shut down. But thankfully, I was in an honor dorm where we worked over in commissary. So I was in commissary every day starting at 5. You know, we were down there at 5-6 o'clock in the morning, and some days we'd be done at 7 p.m. And that's just kind of how I stayed busy. And then I just read books a lot, probably a book a day at least, but on the weekends, probably 2. But yeah, I mean, the experience in there, I know it was just different, but again, I was very lucky where I was placed, because the people in that dorm were very, like, they had to apply to be in there before. Mm-hmm. And then just because we were just starting to come in after COVID, then they just kind of had to put people everywhere. And so, again, I lucked out, and then people, like, because I was living on state pay, so I had no shampoo, I had nothing. And like that night I came back and there was a bunch of stuff on my bed. So the grateful, you know, I'm very grateful for, you know, the experience. Yes, it's taught me a lot. I've done, you know, since I've been out, I've gone from being in a business world, you know, punch a clock in and out, to coming here and realizing, like, this is what I feel like I was supposed to do, like help people and want to be able to assist them. You know, you got a barrier, let's figure out how to get that. Because when I got out, like, again, he was just my son's father was letting me stay at the house. But again, I had no car because I got repossessed while I was in there. You know, I had nothing, basically, just because I didn't have any support in there. Basically no support when I came out. Friends weren't talking to me and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I think that really impacted, like, again, humbled me, because it's like, okay, yeah, I did this and I admit it and I'll talk about it all the time because it's a part of me and who I was. But it's just kind of one of those things, like, you get out and there's, where do you go? And yeah. Luckily, the crazy thing is my parole officer referred me, or my probation officer referred me to a place, and she's like, okay, let me call them. Well, she calls me back and she's like, oh, they won't take you because you didn't do enough crime. Like, I didn't have a high risk crime.
This was a place to live?
No, this was a place to go through programming.
Through training programs.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, well, that, you know, again, like, okay, great. Like, I'm a white girl from the West Side in Rocky River. So, like, the mentality there, I feel like, again, that doesn't happen as often there. So when I came, then she referred me to here, and actually Ronnie Cannon took my phone call. He did my orientation, and it just, like, smooth sailing. Like, I talked on the phone with James Stubbins, our chief staffing manager, because I was like, I have to work by this date or otherwise the judge is going to send me back. And he was dead serious. And so for me, and they're like, listen, we could have you working tomorrow, Renee. Like, and so, like, that just, like, people wanted to help, which, you know, I'm like, who's going to want to hire me when I get out? Like, I stole money, so who's going to trust me? Mm-hmm. So I can't even go work at McDonald's because they won't hire me probably. And so once I got out and came here, like I said, I did the 2-week workshop, was able to go into work experience, and then hire as a program data assistant, which then led me to this position that then I went to more responsibilities with legal assistant and things along those lines, and helping with Jobs and Family Services for people that receive SNAP benefits, helping them maintain their benefits. And then this program we just got the grant for, and we're looking to start our first cohort in August.
Terrific. So Tammy, you, I gather, have been very successful in your re-entry.
Yes.
But I know that you faced some real barriers.
Absolutely.
So some of them statutory, some of them just the way people treated you.
Absolutely.
Could you take us from the day you walked out of prison and tell us in as much detail as you want some of the barriers that you faced?
Well, some of the barriers that I faced when I came home was just people thinking that I was going to fail just because I, you know, just got out of prison. They look down on me, they talk about me, you know, because of my prison time, which really wasn't a part of me. It was just a situation that I was in. It didn't actually define me as a person. So it's like I had to work harder, you know, and be more, I say, dedicated to accomplishing my goals.
So attitude.
Yeah, absolutely. Soon as I got out, though, I stayed in a halfway house for, I think, a month and a half. The typical time a person stays in there is 6 months. It only took me a month and a half to do what I needed to do to get out of there and transition home.
And what did you need? Some of the people listening won't know what a halfway house is.
A halfway house, it basically helps you to transition back into society. Mm-hmm. Well, I had already had a home, and I was my daughter was actually helping me maintain it while I was in prison. So I still had a home to come home to. So it wasn't like I had to look for a home. So that kind of bumped me up a little mm-hmm. bit quicker than most. And as far as finding job, I had went through the Access to Manufacturing program. It's a 3-week course, and it just teach you things about manufacturing. And I completed that course. I graduated. And from there, I came here. I actually do have a job now that they offer me through the Access to Manufacturing class. It's a great opportunity. It's called Rockwell Automation. It's located in Twinsburg. And I mean, the pay is great. I wasn't making nowhere near as much as I'll be making once I start working there next week. So
you're starting next week.
I'm starting next week.
Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been a lot of good opportunities for me.
I just want to stop you. Do you know what you'll be doing?
Yes, Rockwell? I'll actually be a machine operator.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes, a machine operator.
That sounds complicated to me.
Absolutely. But I welcome challenges with a very positive attitude, and I'm eager to learn. I'm eager to accomplish my goals and really to just show everybody that I can do it, you know, because people thought that I was going to fail, you know, my family, my friends. But my kids, my siblings, the people who really know me, they knew like I was just going to come home and just dominate whatever it is that I focused on and whatever it is that I wanted to do. Prison actually has gave me, I'm not going to say it's held me down, but it's actually has put me a step ahead of a lot of people that has already been out here. Because I'm in a position now where I can build my own and make my own, you know, from just the career path that I'm taking now. So it's just like, it put me ahead.
And tell us a little bit about how you were able to get what sounds like a pretty good job and any barriers you faced there in general. Those, we talked about attitude. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In general, employers, I don't know if they have an attitude, but they have certain assumptions.
Yeah.
That mean they won't hire somebody with a prior conviction.
Right. Well, the program that I went through, it actually, they go through second chance employers. And what that is, that those are employers who offer jobs to people like me, people who are coming from out of prison and who are recently have been incarcerated, mm-hmm. or who have a criminal background. They like basically have their doors open for us. All we have to do is put in the work and just fill out the application and do whatever it is that needs to be done as far as the hiring process. Mm-hmm. But the Access to Manufacturing class, it was pretty hard. I'm not going to say it was easy, because it wasn't. The work that they gave us, the PMAs that we had to complete.
What's a PMA?
It's a precision malforming. They're like slides that you have to do on a computer. They're like tests.
Oh, boy.
And you have to read it over and you have to study it, and then they test you on it. And I think it was like 62 of them. And you have to pass them all with a 70%.
I'm breaking out in the cold sweat already, Tim.
Yeah, you have to pass them all with a 70% in order to graduate from the class. So I passed all of those. Actually, my whole class, we studied hard and we ended up graduating. And that the class alone itself just opened up a lot of doors for me, you know, as far as them like wanting to help and put me in a better position. I think God only puts you where he wants you to be. And that was where he wanted me to be, you know. So and it's sad that I had to come out of prison to find that type of opportunity, but it was all for the better. And I'm in a great place now.
Now, one barrier that people often face is restoring their driver's license and mm-hmm. paying off fines and fees.
Absolutely.
Did you have any fines and fees?
Absolutely.
You live in Cleveland now?
Mm-hmm.
I have a son who lives in Solon, mm-hmm. so I know
it's
that
about 35
it's
minutes
about
away.
35 minutes. Mm-hmm. Do you drive there?
Or yes, I drive.
May I ask if you drive there legally?
Yes, I drive there legally. Yes, I absolutely do.
I'm glad to hear that. Was it difficult to get your driver's license back? Was your driver's license suspended?
No, Actually, my driver's license wasn't suspended. I had actually got my driver's license back in 2020, and they were valid at the time that I was incarcerated, but I did have fines and tickets that I had to pay for, and I also had to get me better insurance. And
so you're in prison. How are you supposed to come up with the money to pay those fees and fines?
Well, you don't. You know, you don't. They just really put you out here and just expect you to just figure it out, you know. But towards employment, they've helped me a lot. Like, Renee has helped me a lot. She's helped me out, like, as far as obtaining full coverage insurance for my vehicle, because I own my vehicle. I own my vehicle while I was incarcerated, so I didn't have to worry about coming home and getting a vehicle. As far as
like, but you needed insurance in order
absolutely.
To drive.
Absolutely.
And Renee, you want to talk a little bit about how that worked?
Sure. We were lucky enough to receive a grant through Ohio Children's Trust Fund, and for we just ended the grant on June 30th, but we were able to assist people. And our participants, if they were a parent, had to have a child under 18, and then they qualified for access to these funds for doing that. And so one of the things, like Jamie said, was her insurance. And so sometimes, again, when you get out of prison, people with insurance issues need an SR-22, which is more expensive.
You have to explain what an SR-22
is. It's a bond that they require, you know, if you had some trouble with driving and stuff like that. And uh-huh. So one of the things, again, as a legal assistant here, I do is pull their driver's license. Let me see what's going on and how we remove these barriers. Sometimes it's just paying the fines. But, you know, like I said with Tammy, she needed, you know, SR-22 insurance and made sure she had full coverage. And so we paid through the Ohio Children's Trust Fund. We paid down. We did her down payment and her first month insurance. So she's set technically for like 2 months. But then she knows after that it's her responsibility. We also helped her with getting some court documents that she needed.
Give us a sense, before you go on to sure. court documents, give us a sense of how much all of this costs for a person just coming out of prison.
It depends. I mean, I've seen people with fees of $5,000 out to the BMV, and then I've got like $700. So it just, I mean, it varies per person. Some of them might still have warrants out. And so I find those, you know, typically they're traffic warrants. Again, they just had a ticket, didn't take care of it, and then they put a warrant block. So it's calling the courts, getting them
meaning
back.
Meaning they can't get their license.
Right, they can't get their license.
Or
so
not,
we got
to
resolve the
drive.
City.
Right.
Yeah, we got to resolve it with that city where that warrant block might be for them and see what do they need to do. Do they just owe fines? Then, you know, again, if they're a parent, then I can pay those and help them get their license back.
You pay them out of this fund?
Yes, out of this fund. Uh-huh. We paid for that kind of stuff.
And what happens if you don't pay them?
Then he won't get his, you know, they wouldn't get their license.
Right.
Like if they have sometimes the cities will set up where they can have payment plans and stuff. So for the people that I couldn't help as far as being a parent, then it was setting up a payment plan with that city. Like, okay, is it $25, $50 a month? And most cities, you know, they want their money. So they will work with you to get it. And then if you, you know, make that payment plan, they may release it then for you as long as you're in good standing, but you've got to stay on that payment plan. And again, that's one of the hardest things coming out of prison is because you have no money. You made $20 a month there maybe to survive on.
Sure.
And so coming out, it's just, I was lucky as well where my license didn't get suspended or it didn't expire while I was in there. So I had that when I came out, but like I said, my car got repossessed, so I had no car. And so helping remove these barriers like court fees that they have, you know, if they've got $400 in this court, you know, I was able to help people pay those off. And so that way they can move forward and get their driver's license.
What is a court fee? I know what it is, but again,
you know,
our
court
listeners.
Fees could be fees and fines. Typically there's, you know, depending on the charge.
So a fine, people understand.
Right. Fees is
but
like
fees,
court reporter fees.
You mean you have to pay just
yes.
because
yeah.
you have to go to court?
Right. And so, yeah, you have to pay because you're going to court and there's court reporter, there's, you know, there's always like some research fee. So it's broken down on there so you can see what it is. But that's the hard part. And again, you're coming out, you're already behind the eight ball because you haven't worked. You've been, you know, out of touch.
And one other element, either of you can comment on this. How often do you have to go in person to pay a fee or fine or appear before a judge? Is most of this just writing a check, or is a lot of it actually knowing where to go and who to talk to?
That's the biggest challenge I find for people when they come out. They're like, I don't know what to do. Like, I know I have a warrant, but I need to drive. And so it's
right.
like all of that combined. And, you know, it just one of those things that you just got to like, okay, let's baby steps. Like, let's see what you need to do first. And we make a plan. Like, I'll make a plan with them. It goes, you need to do this, but I'll call the courts for them. Because, you know, again, I know the questions to ask and things like that. So I'll call and be like, okay, what do they need to do? And sometimes it's just, you know, come down and request a payment plan. Great. Take a photo ID to reschedule a hearing. So that's, you know, the easy ones. But there are some that, you know, oh, we want the $400 bond and we want this and, you know, making sure, you know, they're more strict. And so that's what's hard. Is because, you know, I, as a person before this, I would have been freaking out. But again, it almost would paralyze me. Because that's what I find. Like, okay, well, I'm just going to keep driving till, you know, I'll get suspended again. But I have to do what I have to do. I have a child. I have to work. I have to do these things. And right. I can't pay my bills.
And many people keep sure. driving. And what happens if they're suspended again?
They just keep driving.
And the fees pile up.
Right. Everything, the B&B fees pile up. The court cases pile up and costs. And so, again, it's almost like, coming out, you're like paralyzed because you're like, okay, what do I do? And for me, that was a big thing because I came out, I say thankfully during COVID still kind of, because everybody had to wear masks everywhere. And so for me, like going to Mark's, you know, down the street, it was like I could wear a hat, that, you know, mask, and nobody would recognize me. Because again, I didn't have people around there that understood, but I realized there's people like once I came here to work, like that, okay, that's in your past, let's move on. And it's like, no big deal. And it's just like, well, isn't it a big deal? And they're like, it is, but that's not who you are. Mm-hmm. And so like having the support from people here that I work with and that I saw during my workshop days was great because it's like, okay, they're gonna give me a chance. I must be in a bubble here. Because like, okay, you have a background, whatever. You've been to prison, you got court cases, like no big deal. And so like that was the greatest feeling in the world because absolutely. I could come to work and enjoy what I'm doing and not be judged.
I agree.
That's so, the hardest thing is like being out, you know, I say on the west side of the Rocky River, you know, they laugh at me. Miss Shepherd would be like, oh, my uppity white girl over there. And because again, I don't say out there, but it is a different world. Like it's not common for people to get in trouble like that or steal money or do this kind of stuff. But when I came here, it's like, okay, no big deal. And like when I was in prison, people were like, okay, whatever. Like, it was nothing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I have a scarlet letter or something on me where, you know, it freaks you out every time you go out in public or something. I guess see somebody I know and then do they hate me and stuff like that.
Yeah. So, Tammy, I'm going to put you on the spot because Renee referred to records. What was she talking about?
Records as far as like court records.
Yeah. She said she was about ready to tell us about records and I interrupted her. But I'd like to hear from you. What is this record stuff?
Well, it's basically like keeps track of as far as like what you do, you know, if you out here driving crazy or if you out here doing stupid.
And how can that be a barrier?
Well, because they know what you're doing, you know, once you get in trouble, it's automatically written down, you know, it's in black and white at that point.
Does that make it harder to do certain things?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about that from your own experience.
I'm gonna say this before I even got my license. I was one of those people who just was out here driving illegally.
You're not alone. Cleveland anyway.
So it was just like, once I did get focused, and did get, you know, my life together, there was a lot of barriers that I had to face as far as, going to different courts, Euclid, Willoughby. I have to go in front of these people and explain to them why I've been so irresponsible, you know, and then you don't know how these people going to look at you or, you know, what they think. And you don't even know if they really want to help you because sometimes their attitudes be so messed up. You it just overwhelms you, you know, but you have to go in these places and you have to put on a good face and a positive attitude just to accomplish what you need to accomplish, you know. And once I did that, once I got everything situated and got my license and stuff back, everything has been pretty smooth for me as far as, you know, like driving and keeping my record clean and stuff like that.
Was it hard to go to all those places when you didn't have a license?
Absolutely, because it's like, where do I start? Because I didn't even know that I had owed so much
right.
to these courts, you know, until you really sit down and call these places and they tell you, okay, well, this is what you need to do. You need to bring this much money and we can lift up the warrant block. And then you have to go to three or four different places and do the same thing.
And how do you do that when you don't have a license?
Well, you probably drive or or you get a ride. You know, you have to do whatever you have to do in order to do what you need to do. You know what I'm saying?
So I know exactly what
that's the place that I was in.
Yeah.
But luckily now I do have a clean and valid driver's license and I plan on keeping it like that. So I'm basically grateful, you know, for Renee and everything that she's offered, you know, to help and to put me a step ahead than I was, you know, because I need insurance, you know, and I needed plates in my car and they helped me with all of that. So it's a blessing, especially when I'm about to be driving out to Twinsburg, Ohio. They're
going
to be
job.
Looking at me like, okay, we got this black girl with her music loud. We're going to pull her over. You know what I'm saying? So I'll just be prepared. It just prepares you for whatever is going to come.
And Renee, I'll let you finish what you were talking about records. Do you want to
getting anything, again, you've got to go down to the justice system and justice department and figure things out. And that's, again, I waited till I was in my 40s to screw up royally and do the thing I did. And so, like, learning the process, I feel for some of these people that come in through our program, because I'm like, you're 20 years old and you've been in prison the last 3 years. Like, I was freaking out before mine and all my court case hearings and stuff like that. And so coming out, it's like, okay, I need to help these people make it because I made it. And so making sure that they've got stuff that they can have. Because again, you come out and just good luck. Like, I walked out of the prison or the jail and had a phone a friend from that I met while I was incarcerated, and she came and picked me up.
Wow.
Because I was stuck downtown.
So she got out before you.
Yeah, she just did the jail. She didn't go to prison.
Uh-huh.
You know? But yeah, she was in there, and again, they say all this stuff like, oh, don't trust people. But like, again, she was saving grace. She bought me shampoo and stuff. And so it was just those little things. She's like, oh, here's a brownie or stuff. Because it's like, I didn't have anything and people knew that. But I never wanted anybody to take pity on me or anything like that. I get it. Like, you have this, eat it, go for it.
Now, there's this term I've heard called expungement.
Sure.
It's sometimes sealing.
Right.
Could you tell
sure.
me about your experience with that?
So,
personal
sure,
or the people
personal,
you work with?
Yeah. So I am not eligible for an expungement because my degree, I have a felony two. And so felony ones and twos aren't eligible for expungement at this time. They keep changing the laws, which is great. Mm-hmm. But to try to make it easier for people to get misdemeanors and low felonies expunged. But again, if you have weapon charges or violence, and again, that stays on your record. You can't get that expunged. So yeah. Like, for me, it's like, I tell people, like, there was one girl in the one class that was like, how terrible is this? I have an F2. And I'm like, me too. It can't get expunged yet. But again, maybe down the road, but.
And it just explain to our listeners what expunge means.
It means a seal, basically, like you said, like, it closes the record. So it's not publicly found, because everything for a criminal is unfortunately public record. So an employer can just Google you and find it. They can go to the different websites. And that's what I do for our participants, is I go check where they have stuff. Like, okay, do you have something in Euclid? Do you have something in Shaker? Or where do I need to look to help make sure we cover all your bases? So that way they know.
And for the people who are eligible for expungement.
That's a great service we offer here that we actually have.
And tell us what that entails.
So we have an attorney on staff that does the expungements for them at no cost.
Mm-hmm.
He'll prepare the records, make sure everything's ready to go, and then we give them the record or the paperwork to go down and file it if they're eligible.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we'll be like, hey, come back in 6 months and you'll be eligible, just because of the timing, like, you know, so you have to wait so long or something like that.
So, and that's something that your attorney presumably spends a day in court.
Well, he doesn't go to court with them, but he does all the paperwork.
He does
so
the paperwork.
So you can basically go present it and then you go to your hearing. And usually it's
so the granted. Client needs to go to the hearing.
Yeah,
that's
client.
Something
yeah.
else they
something
need
they have to take responsibility
to
for. Yeah, they have to show up. They have to take the paperwork down, file it, and then they have to show up at the hearing.
And Tammy, do you know if your record is eligible for expungement?
No, that's why I actually have a question. Speaking on that topic, because
you came to the right place,
right?
But don't look in my direction.
I'm going to ask Renee. I actually have a felony too, but this is my first felony, so still no.
Okay. Yeah, and that's again, I look at it, I'm like, mine too, but again,
right.
They're working to change the laws for it. However, it's slow.
Okay.
I mean, nothing moves fast in the government, unfortunately. But they're trying, you know, to make it easier for people with records to get them expunged. But there's still challenges because, like, just because mine's telecommunications fraud. Like, that's my F2, but, you know, that doesn't sound...
Doesn't sound that bad.
Right, but I cannot be.
I watch cable news. It's like, seems like telecommunications fraud every night.
Right, and yeah, it is. Like, you look, I read those articles too. It's like, okay, how much jail time did that, or prison time did that person get? Why did this person get that? You know, because I was watching those videos before I went to prison. I'm like, okay, because my public defender was like, oh, I can see you getting 30 days in jail. And then I go in there and I get 4 years. And so I wasn't prepared in any way.
So let me ask each of you about that. When you were going through your trial or hearing, whatever procedure before you were incarcerated, let me ask, did each of you make a plea deal? I'm assuming you did, just because 98% of...
I did. Yes. And only because I was scared.
Of course.
You know, it was my first time ever being in trouble. I'm 36 years old, so I was scared. They said if I took it to trial, I could face 10 to 14. Rather, if I take a plea, I'll get 2 years, which honestly, now with the things I know now that I really know, I wouldn't have never took it. You know, I could have fought for, you know, my name and my freedom, you know.
I understand very well. My specific question is, did you have any idea that, you know, once you served your time after this plea deal, did your lawyer explain to you then there are going to be all these things, what we call collateral consequences?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
You had no idea.
I learned all of that while I was in prison. You know what I'm saying? Like, it kind of, I don't know. I'm looking at it like, okay, well, I've already been in jail for 8 months. They offered me 2 years. I've already done 8 months at a time. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to take the plea deal.
And that's logical.
Absolutely, because I didn't want them playing around with my life or my freedom. You talking 10 to 14 versus 2, who wouldn't take it? You know, even though I know that I'm innocent. And my lawyer knew this, you know what I'm saying? I just believe that if I had a better lawyer, someone who was actually really fighting for me and they really wanted to help me, I could have got out of it, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't regret it, you know, because God put me there and he's taking me down the path that I'm supposed to go down, so.
Well, you're a very generous and forgiving person. Renee, did you take a plea deal?
They wouldn't offer me a plea deal. So the victims, obviously, because they're related to me, were very upset.
Yes.
There was a lot of money over a period of time that I was trusted, and I blew that, obviously. They fought for the maximum sentence. The prosecutor didn't end up dropping the two. There was like a theft and something else, a little bit lower charges, so they wanted to make sure I got the highest one. But they wouldn't offer me a plea deal on time, and that's where, like, my public defender's like, okay, you should be good about 30 days. I could see in my gut, that's what it's telling me. And then, so I really didn't prepare. I said goodbye to my oldest son that Sunday before when he went to his dad, and he hasn't spoken to me since. So I'm not allowed to contact him right now. There's just a lot of stuff that I have to, hoops I have to jump through, and he's in South Carolina now, so I can't even work. Like, I can't afford an attorney. Like, you know, you come out again, you'd love to have these savings, but there's none. And
did you have any idea during the trial or whatever?
There was no trial. It was just a hearing.
During the hearing.
Yeah.
Did you have any idea that there would be all these consequences once you
served? Oh, no. They don't prepare you. Like, I mean, you want to think your public defender has your best interest, but again, like, mine was great. You know, she kept me informed on stuff.
She
filed my motion for judicial release a little bit early, just because I was delayed again going to COVID, but she stayed on top of it. And then she filed it again when it was ripe, and convinced the judge to give it to me. Cause that's when I came back, was transferred back to Cleveland for the hearing. You know, he only said it's because, you know, my public defender convinced him. And that's the only reason he gave it to me. Otherwise, he's like, I'll be happy to send you right back and finish your, you know, 4 years. But yeah, nothing prepares you for coming out. Like, you can hear stories going in, but like when you're inside, like, what do you need to do? But it's like, you can't even take a piece of paper out when you leave.
Wow.
You know, I was being transferred and I had some resources and stuff that people like that I had and couldn't even, you know, I don't get to take that stuff with me.
Is it, this is for both of either of you or both. Are these collateral consequences,
yes,
the all the pile of debt you have to pay off, not being able to have a driver's license, but having to go places, having your record follow you forever in some instances when you go to a job? Is it, I've taken to thinking about this as a second sentence. Is that, I really want to know your opinion. Is that a good way to think
Absolutely.
Of it? Or is that demeaning to even compare it to your first sentence, which was doing jail time?
I think it's fair. Just because they are collateral. Like, here we are, you're out. Congratulations, you did your time, but guess what? You're gonna be doing the, you know, you can't get a job here, you can't do this, you can't go here, I can't even live in the county. You know, someone's like, oh, come visit me. I'm like, oh, you're in Lorain County, I can't go, I gotta ask my PO, you know, and
you can't contact your son?
No. I mean, my one probation officer said she would allow me to go down there if, you know, again, it would help, but it didn't. Kind of, you know, again, collateral damage. Like, I represented myself in my custody case before with him in Cleveland. I knew this Ohio, I knew the laws, but South Carolina is a whole different ball game. And it just, I got, you know, I couldn't fight it. He had a paid attorney, and here's me again out of prison. They're using that against me. You know, they held it like, oh, you know, you stole, you know, they said all this stuff. And so, you know, it is collateral when you come out, and there's just like, okay, here's your challenges. Good luck. Like I said, I walked out onto the street in my prison shoes and some shorts that someone had given me while I was on the inside. And like, I had clothes, thankfully, back at the house. But again, it's just all of that, you know, good luck getting a car, good luck doing this. And, you know, I rode the bus and figured out how to get downtown for the first time.
Yeah.
I hadn't done that. I mean, I had my driver's license since I was 16. I never had to ride the bus. I mean, now, like, I'm like, okay, that's great. Like, less stressful because, you know, driving can be a little fun here. But yeah, it's just, there's so many things stacked up. And again, if you don't know where to start, like, it paralyzes. For me, it paralyzes it because it's like, okay, I can't handle any of this right now. So I'm going to just focus on what I can handle. And let me find out where my kids are going to eat for dinner tonight. And then, you know, this, all of this stuff over here, like, oh, who's going to hire me? Who's going to do that? You know, good luck, you know?
And Tammy, would you use the phrase? Is that an accurate description, the second sentence? Or does that insulting to even compare it to serving time in prison?
I would say, yeah. Like, in some ways, it's probably even worse. You know, because in prison, you know what to expect. You know what's coming. But when you get out here, you know, it's just like you have all these things that you have to do. And your record is holding you back. You know, like, we are a product of our environment, you know? So it's just like, how do you expect me to succeed if I don't have the tools to do that? Now, if I had the tools, I could, you know? So it's basically just like starting all over again.
And you know about tools because you're going to be operating that machine in a couple of days.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Is there anything else that either of you would like to say on our general topic of collateral consequences, the barriers that either of you have faced in reentering society?
I think we're both still facing them because, you know, I'm on probation, she's on an ankle monitor. So we're still technically, you know, I check in every month and stuff. So,
and they're following me everywhere I go.
Right. She's being, you know, so it's not like, I mean, you get out, congratulations, you're not physically in prison anymore. But sometimes I just say it, like, I hear stories from people in the halfway houses and they're like, I just would have rather sat in prison my last couple months instead of coming
Why
out.
Is that? Why would anyone rather be in prison than in
because,
a halfway house?
You know, they come out and, again, it's more restrictive. they give you some freedom at time once you earn it. But again, you're still like, you can't ride in people's cars. You can't do this. You can't, like, again, the rules are still
there. So there are all these rules.
Right.
Also.
So yeah. Like, based
might as well still be in prison.
Yeah.
Right. And that's where, like, in prison, you've got a bed to sleep in, a roof over your head, and three meals if you want to eat those. And so it's like you come out and there's just that collateral where it's, you know, where do I start? And, oh, I can't do this because I don't have the money to pay for this. I can't do this because I definitely don't have the money. And so, again, finding agencies like Towards Employment that I had no information, never knew anything about it, it was like my saving grace. Because, again, I was scared. I'm like, how am I going to apply? But going through the workshop, how they answer the questions and things like that helped me a lot. But, again, at the end of the day, I was like, I want to work here just because, you know, I want to help people and help them navigate it. And I share my story with everybody. When I go into the workshop to present their legal backgrounds to them that I run for them, you know, I share my story. Like, it's, you know, I get it, you know, it stinks in there. And, you know, so it's just interesting because then they're like, oh, how do I do this? Or how do I do that? And I'm like, okay, let's figure that out if I don't know. Because we just, you know, you want to help them. But again, there's still restrictions. Like, she has to come to and here from here certain times. And so it's almost like you're still in there, but you're, again, now you got your people that are judging you. You've got your background on your back. And then, like, how do I do this? How do I go here?
There's family.
Yeah.
For good, which is good, but I'm sure there's some really tough parts about that.
Right, like my family's not speaking to me just because of the situation, and I have to respect that, even though it...
Tammy, you get the last word.
Oh, well, what I'll just say is, and I'm not just saying it to be funny, but once you're in the system, I think the system now is just designed for you to keep failing. You know, luckily, myself and Renee, you know, like, we've overcome those barriers, you know, and still are, you know. I just say you just got to stay positive and stay motivated and set goals, you know, like, because you got to know what you want in life. You got to know where you're going. And if you have responsibilities or things to take care of, then failing is just not an option. It's not one to me. So I'm just doing what I have to do. And I'm proving to myself that I can do it, not to the judges or to the parole officer or to my caseworkers, to myself. It makes me feel better as a human being, as a mother, to know that I can overcome anything, basically.
Can I come visit you at work in Twinsburg when I visit my grandkids in Solon?
Absolutely.
I look forward to that.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you.